Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello?
Look, I'm going to level with you. I have my own things to deal with. After all, we are about to have a lovely landing.
The Orphans, an original cinematic audio drama, is now available.
And now, The Orphans Facility, an exciting new prequel series. Catch up with Season 1 with new episodes of Facility coming bi-weekly.
The following episode of Flame On is presented by the Nerdy Show Network.
Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse.
All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop.
Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination.
And with the generous support of listeners like you.
To learn how you can support this and other fine geeky programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
What's going on, everybody? Pat DeBerry here with another episode of Flame On. I am joined today by Senor Eric.
Hello.
Senor BJ.
Hola.
And Senor Brian.
Hello.
And we are here to do a microsode just for you. Yes, you, dear listener. Just you.
We can see you.
No one else is hearing this. Just you. I swear. It is the month of December, and in the tradition of taking things away from people in need, just like those PlayStation 5s being ripped right out of Santa's sack for those children who want it, but cannot get it, we are here to talk about shows that were ripped away from us before their time. Now, everybody in the geek fandom has heard about the cries from the fans to bring back shows like Firefly, which people said ended way too soon, not without some network obstruction and just doing their best to just make it not work. It became a cult classic and was revived for a film, a movie, back in the years ago. I don't even want to know how many years ago Serenity was, because it's just going to make me feel really old right now.
I want to say 2005 or 2006.
Oh, stop it. Just stop. Stop. Stop it.
Wait, wait. I have a sound for that. There you go.
I'm glad I don't have to do that again.
But we are here to talk about shows that we felt should have gone on longer, but did not. Either they were canceled before they could complete their natural run, or shows that maybe did have a finish because the production team was given the heads up that they were going to be wrapping up or would not be able to continue on past the season that they were producing. So when BJ brought this topic up, I thought it was pretty cool because we all have that show that we're like, damn, I wish there was more of it. And when you sit there and you can watch, you know, the one season or two seasons and just enjoy it still and go, I would have loved to have seen where this would have gone. And I just remembered another one that totally could be my topic today, starring the same person who's in the show that I'm going to be talking about today. So with that being said, let's kick it off. Eric, why don't you tell us what your show is that you wish would have continued on longer than it did?
So Marvel movies have done a lot great, but when it comes to their TV shows, it's been kind of hit or miss. I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D. got a long run, and I feel it was, I mean, are they doing their last season now?
They finished. It's up on Netflix already.
Gotcha. So they were able to kind of run out and probably lasted a little longer than they should have. But the show that I wish had gotten more seasons is Agent Carter. Because
thank you.
Hayley Atwell is phenomenal as Peggy Carter. So that plus it being a period piece, which is always nice. And just getting to see the beginnings of S.H.I.E.L.D. and what was going on back after World War II. It was just beautifully done. Again, Haley was amazing. And I feel the second season, they were able to end the season arc, but the overarching story, I feel like they set up a couple things that were a little cliffhangery at the end there.
Well, we probably want to go ahead and say spoiler alert before for all the shows we're about to talk about, because we're probably going to have to talk about their ending.
Right. I mean, I feel like most of us are picking older shows that people should have seen by now. But, so at the end of the second season, she has a love interest. Not that she's forgotten about Cap, but she's kind of moved on at that point. But in the movies, at Endgame, Cap goes back, so it'd be interesting to see how does that line up? Like, what year does he reappear? Does Sousa just get kicked to the side? What happened?
There was that. Actually, and you need to watch, the last season of S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of touches on that a bit. But there, it would be interesting because not only did they have the whole thing with her and Sousa up in the air, they had hinted a lot in season one and two about the Red Room program that eventually Natasha comes from, Black Widow, because there was a... I loved how they did this, too, because they had that one agent in the first season who literally had the exact same fight style as Natasha in the movies, and I thought that was like a perfect way to kind of build on the movies. It added more layer. Like they really hadn't said anything about the Red Room program in the movies, other than like, you know, they make all their agents infertile, so you don't know how long that program has actually been going on in Russia. So I felt like that was a really cool thing, but they really didn't. She was kind of a recurring antagonist, so it would have been cool to see where her storyline went, and then not to mention the murder of her boss, like right at the end. And then they were supposed to introduce her brother, also, who was like an MI5 agent.
Yeah, it was rumored that the third season was going to happen in London, which would have been neat as well.
Oh, nice.
And the storyline from the second season with the dark matter, dark force, whatever. Did that ever pay off in S.H.I.E.L.D. at all? I didn't watch the last couple seasons of S.H.I.E.L.D.
A little bit. They mention it in, I want to say, the next to last season. They touch on it actually a lot. They don't really give a really good explanation for it. It's just more of like, oh, that's what that thing is. Which is a lot of the last two seasons of S.H.I.E.L.D. I want to say the second season of Agent Carter, you definitely is a bit more cohesive to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But it's super interesting because I feel like the Marvel TV stuff definitely did period stuff better than like their modern stuff. I don't know if that's just because when you rely on technology and from a narrative standpoint, it's kind of hard to make certain problems like a problem, like communication and bits and things like that. But when you have it take place in like where did it take place? The '60s or no, the '50s, right?
Yeah, the '50s, because it was right after World War II.
Exactly. So when you have it take place, when you have a story like this take place in the '50s, you can come up with like imaginative ways that aren't like, oh, I pushed a button. Oh, I rewired this thing. Oh, I dumped my phaser's power into the command console so I could get power back to the bridge. Voyager. you know, just little things like that.
The final season of S.H.I.E.L.D. still did stuff like that.
Yeah,
shows up.
Yeah, and that's what I mean, is with Agent Carter, you really don't have that option unless you start to really get into more sci-fi territory, which is something I appreciated, because Agent Carter, to me, the writing, you had to really have those characters pop a lot more, because it's more of a period piece, and it's a period piece from the point of view of a woman in the '50s. So, you know, you can't really have the same people giving her the same problems all the time, you know, otherwise it becomes too sitcom-y. So I just love the development of because we already knew who Peggy Carter was from the movies, from the first Captain America movie. So they didn't really have to develop her more. It was more developing the world around her. And I literally loved all of the side characters in Agent Carter. I don't think there was a single side character that I was like, I could do with less of them. I think almost every single character I wanted more of.
For sure. And honestly, to tie the fact that they tied at least part of it back in with the final season of S.H.I.E.L.D. Eric, where did you leave off with S.H.I.E.L.D.? Or did you not get into it much at all?
What was it? They were in the alternate universe fighting the doubles?
In the framework. Okay, so you're back a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You're not super far back. You're a little far back, but you're not super far back.
If you were so inclined, and you almost don't have to, well, I mean, kind of do, but season 6 and 7 of S.H.I.E.L.D., I think were probably some of the strongest that they put out, aside from, you're probably some of the strongest that they put out, because even at the beginning, it was still a little hand-wavy and a little, okay, we're going to shoehorn this all in to make it work and, you know, try to push this. The only other kind of storylines that I think were really strong during their entire run were a lot of the Mockingbird stuff. And I'm really sad that Mockingbird, in that iteration, won't continue on. Of the same token, you know, we talk about these, you know, Marvel shows that were part of Marvel TV, which no longer exist now. It's all kind of folded into the umbrella of Kevin Feige and the MCU, and now Marvel, you know, studios doing the television stuff, which I am super excited. We are a little over a month away from WandaVision, and I'm stoked to see what that's going to do, and I'm so excited for it. But just like Agent Carter, we had our Netflix shows where not all of them were astounding and amazing. But you had stuff like Daredevil that was great. You had Jessica Jones and even Luke Cage, which I would love to see some of this stuff get wrapped back in some way, shape, or form. And I do love that Peggy got incorporated into more things, not just, you know, her initial interaction and then the series and then kind of, you know, left to her own devices at that point. But, you know, she was in Ant-Man, you know, getting her happy ending in Endgame, that kind of stuff. So I do enjoy that, and I did love the fact that they played with Sousa a bit more, because I enjoy the actor, and that'll tie into my show when we get around to it, because the actor who played Sousa was in the show I'm going to talk about. Any comments or thoughts you want to add in, Brian, on the topic of Agent Carter?
I love the show, but I actually didn't watch the third season.
There wasn't a third
season. Oh, then I guess I didn't finish the third season. Gosh. Well, whatever the last part was, I just don't remember. Like, and we were talking about it a little bit, and I just don't remember that either. So I don't know if I just didn't finish. I guess that's what it was. I didn't finish the second season. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad her story had a kind of ending. But yeah, it was good. I loved the show. I mean, I loved the S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter. So yeah, no, that's all I have.
All right. Any final bows you want to put on Agent Carter before we put her show to rest one more time?
No, just watch it if you have.
It is available on Disney Plus, right?
I believe.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Very good. So Eric's pick for a show that ended too soon is Marvel's Agent Carter. Go stream it. Go check it out. It was a fun show, and I did enjoy the Black Widow-esque-ness of her rival there. All right, Brian, why don't you take it away with your pick for a show that ended too soon, in your opinion?
Oh my gosh, you guys have like thrown me for a curve. I'm sitting here like I had some picks. I had some, you know, I liked like Stargate Universe. Didn't end with unexpectedly ended, didn't finish their story. Hannibal, even though the ending that they did get is, you know, pretty interesting and I like, but, you know, that could have kept going and I would have been thrilled. Eric, before we started recording, threw out The Middleman, which, oh my God, one of my favorite shows that no one's heard of. And, you know, we're doing this on Zoom, but you can't see it. So, I'm holding up my own copy here of the, cause it's from a comic book and, it's a delightful comic book. You can still find it, I'm sure, out there in the digital world. Javier Grillo, I can never say his last name, Marsouche, is a fantastic writer who's gone on doing a lot of TV. And so it is his baby, and it is a fantastic baby, indeed. But I reached out to we have a, spoilers here, we have a Discord server now, which you'll be finding more about, I think, soon. And I put out a call on there. I said, well, what do you guys think? Tell me what your favorite, you know, shows that ended before their time were. And oh my God, like, you know, another reminder of a show that I'm going to talk about here, I swear, that I should have thought of immediately, from our friend John up in Charlotte, or over in Charlotte now. I don't know. I can't do it directions, but, and a Deadly Class from our friend, Matt. Aww. Up in Canada. So just so many good shows, but if I have to pick one, which I guess I kind of didn't, cause I kind of said a bunch, but you know what I'm saying? If I had to pick one,
we call that pulling a Pat.
Well, there we go. I've been accused of worse. So, it would be, Pushing Daisies because, Brian Fuller, who you probably have heard of him or seen his work, Hannibal being probably his most successful TV show, I think.
Didn't he work on the first two seasons of Heroes?
He did work on it. Yeah, I believe so. But as one of many producers, like, it wasn't his show. Like, he wasn't a showrunner. So Pushing Daisies, Hannibal, Wonderfalls, Star Trek Discovery before he left. Oh, I know. That's another good entry, honestly. So there's so many. But yeah, Brian Fuller, Dead Like Me. He actually started Dead Like Me and then again walked away very quickly. And that's another show. God, there's so many. So back to the point. Pushing Daisies. If you have not seen it, you have two seasons. I think they're like half seasons, I think. Maybe one of them's a little more full, but they didn't get the back nine for the second season. I was just reading a thing about this. And it is a delightfully beautiful fairy tale. Fuller likes to paint in bold colors, whether they're bright pastels and hues of like warmth and love in Pushing Daisies, or they're like blood and guts and darkness in Hannibal.
It's weird. It's almost like you look at Pushing Daisies, and Pushing Daisies almost feels like the closest thing on television I've seen to a Tim Burton-esque sort of like cinematography and feel.
Do you know what that is? Barry Levinson, who has done The Addams Family, Men in Black. So Barry Levinson was heavily involved in Pushing Daisies and has, I believe, either influenced Tim Burton or worked with Tim Burton outright. I don't remember what project they did together, but yeah, Barry Levinson is that voice, is that style that you're seeing.
Okay.
And so anyway, Fuller knows how to.
Because I also see some Wes Anderson in it too, as far as
100%.
Yeah.
The bright colors, be sure. And it is an odd series. And this is probably why. So there's two reasons it didn't succeed. One, it's an odd series. It's got a fantastic cast that I'll talk about in a second. But it was actually a victim of the writer's strike. Yep. If you don't remember, there was this whole big writer's strike back in the, 2010s or late 20-aughts? I don't know.
2008.
Perfect. Yep. Thank you. So the writer's strike... because writers needed a better deal on their contracts, they basically walked off all their projects, anyone who was unionized, and it shut down production for many, many shows. Ones that were a more obvious success, they came back fine eventually. It did give rise to a lot of reality TV at the time, and oh my God, we still haven't recovered, but whatever. It also killed shows that were on the margins and just didn't quite make it. And again, because the voice is so unique, and the story was a little off-center, I think people just didn't have a chance to really grow into it. But it was on ABC. I'm guessing it's still out there on the streams. It's about Chuck and Ned. Principally, Chuck is a young woman who dies. And I'm trying to find who played her, but it's somebody you definitely are familiar with.
It's Ned not is one of the Deschanels.
It totally looks like a Deschanel, but she's not.
I was going to joke and say that it was Zooey Deschanel.
So she dies and is kind of brought back to life through happenstance with this character of Ned. And Ned is a pie maker. They make a big point about his pie shop and how he's a pie maker. And that's some of the fairy tale elements that come in. But also, he has this magical power that he just... can bring people back from the dead when he touches them once. And then after he touches them once, they're alive for a certain period of time until he touches them again, and then they die again for forever. And so he touches Chuck, brings her back to life, and I think quickly realizes that he likes her, that there's a thing. She doesn't want to die. She doesn't want to be dead again. So he has to then never touch her directly ever again, kind of the rogue problem, right? Not that Rogue would kill people, but you can't touch, right?
There's the caveat of what happens if he doesn't touch them again.
They start to fall apart, I think, right?
It's after a minute. I think it was
it's a weird, it's like an odd number. It's like a minute and 13 seconds or something. I can't remember the reasoning behind it, but there is a mythos behind the reason. But if he doesn't touch them again, somebody else in the vicinity dies.
That's what it is. That's right. So there's a price. There's a price.
For leaving them alive.
I want to amend a statement I made. It is not Barry Levinson. It is Barry Sonnenfeld. One of the other famous Barrys in TV and movies. The actress is Anna Friel.
Who
I know has been in other things, but I could not for the life of me tell you what. So. I'm also trying to figure out what Barry Sonnenfeld did, if he did anything with what's his name, but I can't figure that out. So that's fine. It's beautiful. So we're giving you the basics, right? There is such a beautiful cast in this piece, this show. Probably of all of the characters, the one that steals the show for me is Kristen Chenoweth, which if you're a fan of Wicked from Broadway. Or what else has she been in? She was in Good Christian Man, Bitches.
Charlie Brown.
You just mentioned a show. We're going to have to do this as a two-parter.
I know, that's another show, right?
As soon as you mentioned the writer's strike, mine just changed, so.
Pat, who did you say?
She was in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Yep. That's right, yes.
The musical.
She was also in Candide.
Candide, of course. And then what was the... she was in American Gods as, what was she?
Ostra.
Easter.
Easter, yeah. Ostra, yeah. So you know Kristen Chenoweth. You've undoubtedly, if you're a gay person listening to the show, you know who she is, right? We don't have to explain her. But so she steals the show.
And if you haven't heard her sing, go listen to Taylor the Latte Boy. That's all I'm saying.
Or Glitter and Be Gay from Candide, which was a special sort of production they did at the time. And it's so amazing. But yeah, so there's so many more people too. But Kristen Chenoweth plays Olive, who's this sort of at first sort of rival for Chuck, I think, a little bit. Definitely has her hang up on Ned at one point. But gets to kind of have her own life throughout the story and grow. Chi McBride, I forgot his character's name. Emerson. Emerson Codd. A private investigator.
I love Emerson.
He gets his own kind of cool storyline. The aunts. Chuck's aunts. Swoozie Kurtz and... Ellen Green, yes. Fantastic actresses from Broadway and other... And they get featured in that show as these fantastic and bizarre aunts. Here's the thing, though. When it died... They absolutely did not expect it to die. They thought they were going to get their back nine, you know, again, writer strike related. And so the last three episodes are actually side character episodes about Olive, Emerson, and the ants. And so they really don't get to do anything to resolve Chuck and Ned's love story. And it's a love story. They do fall in love. Spoilers. But again, they have to love each other sort of at a distance, though they do get creative and find ways to, you know, work around that.
It's super cute because like there's just it's one of the few things I've ever seen where I'm like, this is real romance, because like they can't really be physical, but that's not really the focus. It's like every time he does something nice for her or something, she really wants to express it, but she doesn't want to like she wouldn't want to die again. But there's just this cute moment where she takes out like a sheet of plastic wrap for one of the pies, and like. Kisses him through it, and it's just this quick little cute moment, and I'm like, oh, I'm feeling feelings. I'm like, this is cute.
It's a fairy tale for sure. Stylistically, there's a narrator. It's very over the top. Narrated by Jim Dale, actually, who I know the name, but I cannot think of what else he's done. Gosh, it's funny. It's a fun show. Random other cameos. I think Pee Wee Herman shows up at one point.
Yep.
As like another rival, a lot of like random cameos in the grand tradition of television who you go, oh, I know so-and-so. But yeah, it's a great show. Beautiful music. I do want to say my favorite moment in that show probably has to be the sing-along that they do or the spontaneous musical number that they do to They Might Be Giants, Birdhouse in Your Soul, which you've probably heard it. Again, you're probably geeky and gay, so you should know this song too. But it's a very special song in my life, and it's it means a lot, and it's also just beautifully realized there by I think it was Ned and Olive singing it, but yeah, oh, so beautiful, and it's just it's a great show. They said they're gonna make a comic book. I know they did like a quick little thing. I don't think it ever actually was fully fleshed out as a real ongoing comic. And then, of course, the actors, a lot of Fuller's projects that get ended early, which a lot of them do, the actors and they love working with him and they all seem to kind of stay in touch. And every so often you'll hear Hannibal actors talk about bringing Hannibal back, or you'll hear Pushing Daisies actors talk about bringing Pushing Daisies back. So you never know in this day and age, if some of you go out and rediscover it and word gets out, it could come back. We just, you know, it's 2020. Anything can happen. So I know everybody here loves the show.
I'm surprised you didn't talk more about Lee Pace. Like, you didn't even mention him by name as far as
who it was. I got so caught up in everybody else that you're right. And longtime listeners of the show, you've probably heard me talk about Lee Pace. I have a bit of a man crush on him. I mean, it's not even a man crush. I think he's adorable. Whatever. He's not my type necessarily, but when he came out, I mean, he's now out as a I think at least a bi. I think he's gay, but whatever. Doesn't matter what his sexuality is. He's still adorable. Every project he's been in, especially The Fall. Oh, we could talk about that for hours. But love Lee Pace. Love him. I think his Marvel stuff is to me the least useful for me because he's hidden his beautiful geeky boyish visage is hidden in so much makeup, and it just it ruins it for me. But yeah, you know, you're right. Thank you, Pat. Lee Pace is a golden god, and yeah.
I was gonna say the same thing about Christopher Eccleston and his tenure in the MCU. I don't think boyish visage is the proper verbiage for Christopher Eccleston's face, but
yeah, what would be Mad TV-esque, or not Mad TV, Mad Magazine, Charles E. Newman-esque, I don't know, whatever Eccleston's face is, but yeah.
It's adorable. I have an odd crush on Christopher Eccleston, I don't know.
Yeah.
Something about
him. Well, he's your first doctor. You always had a crush on your first doctor.
Is it the ears?
It might be the ears. I yeah. realize that I do have a thing for ears that stick out. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. But anywho, yeah, all Pushing right. Daisies was definitely a, it was something that I didn't know about when it was on the air. Brian introduced it to me, and I definitely enjoyed the show. And it was one of the things that before we started recording, I had brought up, which I'm glad that it became, a topic for us to all talk about, because it really was such a great show. And I forgot that it was a victim of the writer's strike. And if you have a chance to watch it, I definitely recommend taking a little bit of time, because it's a season and a half of TV. Watch it and just have a lovely afternoon, binge of good quality, wholesome television. Eric, what you got to add on to the Pushing Daisies discussion?
Just that it was a beautiful show. I remember the aesthetic more than the storylines right now, just because it's been so long since I've watched the show. The characters were all brilliantly done, but it's just the aesthetic of the pie hole and all that. Yeah.
That was sure. literally the name of his pie shop, just for clear, yeah. just to clear his pie hole could be taken other ways.
I remember his pie hole so well.
Another one that came up from the Discord is our friend Alex down in NOLA, and he mentioned and reminded me of Caprica, another freaking show that had an ignominious death after being this interesting idea of a Battlestar Galactica, the rebooted prequel. It made it a season and then died on the vine. So like you said, BJ, they could totally do another iteration of this. I think we've actually done this topic a long time ago, and it's like oddly like tickling neurons in the back of my long-term memory, and I'm like, this feels like we've done this, but hey, we could do it again, and I'll have forgotten about it by then too.
Honestly, I feel like this needs to be a series, because this is very cathartic for me right now, and it's just reminding me. It's cathartic, but it's also hurting me, especially when I get to my topic, because it was painful, my topic.
Well, speaking of that, so that was Pushing Daisies. That was Brian's choice for after the 17 other ones, after he pulled a massive pat and picked 17 other shows before getting to his topic. It's all right. I only have like two that I'm going to say before my topic, so I'll only pull a minor pat today. But BJ, why don't you go ahead and tell us what your choice is for a show that ended too soon, in your opinion?
So, I had to rack my brain on this because, so, a trend that we're starting to notice is, we're kind of in this age of reboots, or remake. We got reboots and we got remakes coming left and right, and some have been really, really good, like She-Ra, and Animaniacs so far has been actually very entertaining, So I was kind of racking my brain, and originally I was going to go with Star vs. the Forces of Evil, but then Brian mentioned possibly the most painful television moment of my life, and that was the writer's strike. And I have to talk about the CW's second lesser-known sci-fi fantasy series, Reaper.
Oh, another one. Oh my God.
Reaper. When I tell you, as soon as you mentioned the writer's strike, it literally hit me like a car, and I was brought back to Reaper. And for those of you, back when the CW started, Supernatural was its literally only fantasy series. Everything CW had was like, they had a remake of Melrose Place, 90210, a couple of dramedies. They hadn't even touched Arrow yet. Like, it was just a weird TV network. And then they came out with Reaper, which is about a guy named Sam Oliver, and on his 21st birthday, he finds out that his parents sold his soul to the devil somehow. And Ray Wise, who has been in literally everything, he was in Batman the Killing Joke as Commissioner Gordon. He was Twin Peaks.
Oh my gosh. Yeah,
he was in Twin Peaks. He was in Sabrina, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, as Enoch the Demon. Yeah, he's been in everything. So feel free to give him a Google. But Ray Wise plays Tyler Labine.
Yes.
This show introduced me to Tyler Labine, and let me tell you, that was a sexual awakening for me in college. I'm not even going to lie. 2007 was my year of the bear, because when I saw Tyler Labine, I was like, well, that's it. That's the thing. That's what I like. Tyler Labine. And then Rick Gonzalez, who was also, he played a Wild Dog in Arrow, and he's been in just about everything under the sun as well. And then also, just a little trivia thing, Missy Peregrine, who's the love interest of the series, she was the dancing white girl in Missy Elliott's, one of Missy Elliott's music videos. Which one was that? It was, it's gonna drive me crazy.
Was it, Work It?
Yes.
Yeah, because Missy brought her out, it was like a year or two ago, when it was like the anniversary of one of like the MTV Awards as an adult, and she came out and did the same dance and all
she
that.
She did the whole dance, that's right. But she was in Van Helsing. She's been in, like, the alumni for the show is absolutely ridiculous, and it is a huge, Michael Ian Black and, Ken Marino, they play a gay couple that are demons. One of them dies and becomes the gay dead demon Steve. So pretty much you just follow around this poor soul, Sam Oliver, and his job the devil gives him is that he has to collect souls that have escaped from hell. And it's very episodic in its first season. He gets a vessel to trap them. His first vessel is a vacuum cleaner. Like a dirt devil. The puns are everywhere. The visual comedy puns are just about, I lost track of them. There's a deeper lore behind the story with whatever deal his parents had with the devil. You never see the devil and his parents interact. Which is a really, I rewatched the series, I think, a couple years ago, and that was something I really noticed that I really wish it panned out. It was hilarious. The souls are kind of like a creature of the week sort of thing. And, the way Ray Wise kind of explains their, like, why they have the powers that they have is because of this. And it hurt so bad because the second season, when the writer's strike happened in the middle of the first season, and they were building up to a story with some sort of love interest or something, and that literally got thrown out the window when the writer's strike ended. So it was one of those shows that actually, I don't think it ended because of the writer's strike. Just the writer's strike just put a big dent in its first season. And the second season came around and they developed more plot. You had the introduction of demons trying to reclaim their become angels again. And it was really the first. It was honestly, you could have viewed this as a sort of proto Good Place almost, because it's really about a lot of the themes in the series: atonement, trying to do the right thing, even though it really fucking sucks. Just a lot of those things where you have a lot of good characters getting caught in the crossfire. It was way ahead of its time. I really think something like that would have flourished now. It was from 2007 to 2009 is when it ran. It culminated in the main character finding out that he can actually challenge the devil to a game to win his soul back. And he loses, but his girlfriend puts her soul on the line, and he goes to play another game, and you're actually introduced to an angel for the first time in the series. And the angel sabotages his game, and she loses her soul to the devil as well. So there's this kind of build-up to them kind of being a couple and collecting souls. You've got the introduction of angels. Demons were introduced at the end of season one and beginning of season two. And there's just all this lore. They introduced Nephilim. And there's just all this lore that they didn't do in the series, and I remember it was the first time I had gotten Twitter, and I was following Tyler Labine on every social media, partially because I'm a pervert, but also partially because I wanted to know what was going on with the show. And it was supposed to get picked up as a comic book, but it never did. I completely missed out. The main character is played by Brett Harrison, who was in the remake of V. And he's done bits and pieces here. He's not a humongous actor. Right now he just does a lot of drama TV series. He was on The Ranch, which is a sitcom on Netflix. It broke my heart. I think that was the first time a show had been canceled, and it had broken my heart, and I was like, I didn't want to start another show for the longest time. Did any of you guys watch it?
Of course. I'm glad you talked through a lot of it, because honestly, it's been a while and I forgot. But I really appreciated the satirization of working at like a Home Depot or a big box.
Yes.
Chuck also in that kind of same time frame was doing that. And I really appreciated that. It kind of like what Superstore ended up doing for Walmart-ish stores.
Yep.
This was doing it back much earlier, maybe not as focused on that element, certainly more the supernatural, but it was a hilarious show. And yeah, you're right. Totally a victim of that same era of those greedy writers trying to get their extra dollar. No, I'm just kidding. I totally supported the writer's strike, and I'm just sad that there were, you know, casualties like this.
Well, but I don't think it was a casualty from that. I think it felt like more of a casualty. It felt like it was on the wrong network to me.
The CW, or
it was the second supernatural like esque series on the CW, and I think if you go back and look up their catalog, they really, honestly, Supernatural for what it was at the time, it was very gritty, very drama-oriented, and that's what the CW was. The CW was a very drama-oriented, this was like what you'd call a horror comedy, but it was heavier on the comedy than the horror.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas everything else was like Supernatural's a drama horror. I think there's a show called Privilege that was a dramedy. Everything had some sort of essence of drama in it, and the essence of drama in Reaper is very diminished. Like, you know, there's characters hooking up and stuff, but it's not like, you know, the sole focus of more than maybe two episodes. Everything's really focused on Sam's relationship with the devil, which is... So it was, honestly, if you're listening and have not seen Reaper, I think it's still on Netflix. I'm almost 100% sure it's still on Netflix. But definitely do yourself a favor and watch it. If you don't know who Ray Wise is, you will after watching like the first two episodes of this series, because the devil's interaction with Sam makes the whole thing.
Any other thoughts or things they want to add in about Reaper? I didn't watch it, so I sadly don't have anything to add to this part of the conversation.
You get to see Tyler Labine in underwear, I know, at least one or two episodes, so.
I know. I knew the name sounded familiar, and Eric's reaction, I was like, I know, I feel like I've heard this name before. And then I realized, oh, he was in Escape Room.
Well, he was in Escape Room, and he was in the newer Voltron as Hunk.
I would say he's not shirtless in, as a voice actor.
Right. No. If you ever saw Tucker and Dale versus the Forces of Evil, that's a fun one.
That's a great... You didn't see that? I thought we watched that.
Mm-mm.
Huh. That is a great movie. There's a sequel, too, I never saw. With Adam Tudyk.
Yep.
So yeah, 100%. If you want a lot of him in a thing, the Reaper, and then that series is.
I mean, if you want Tyler Labine in overalls and redneckish and covered in blood, then yeah, definitely see Tucker and Dale versus the Forces of Evil.
It works for some people, I'm sure, in our audience more. It, you know,
works for me.
And you mentioned Alan Tudyk. Oh, y'all are just setting up my show very well. I know,
we've been boosting your show like this entire episode.
The cast for mine is just littered throughout like everything that we've been talking about.
And then what would be great is if we just canceled this episode right here and right now. And then never did another one ever.
My pick is.
That's what it feels like. Listen,
we do a Sopranos ending. Can we go out on "Don't Stop Believing"?
This is what it feels like, listeners.
It'll tie right back into BJ's talking about Glee before we started recording.
Oh, geez. Oh my God.
Don't stop believing. Fade to black. Done. All right. Any last comments or chatter we want about Reaper before we close out and put that show to bed again one last time? All right. Well, that is Reaper, BJ's choice for a television show that ended too soon.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Okay, so... Let's talk about mine. So really, there's only one other one that I want to give a shout out to, because we've mentioned so many amazing shows that ended so early, and a lot of them without proper closure, because they thought they were going to get more time to be able to tell stories, and they didn't. The show that I want to give a shout out to that did end too soon... was a show called True Calling. I don't know if anybody else watched that. It was done, I believe, shortly after the end of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I want to say it was like 2004, 2005, around that time. And it starred Eliza Dushku as a woman who was working at a morgue. It also was, I think, my earliest introduction to Zach Galifianakis before his venture into fame and stardom and bare celebrity, but as the her boss in the show. And it was done in such a way that it was very episodic. They did have an overarching plot, but it was very much formulaic, like, something's going on, and then a dead person would open their eyes and look at True and tell her, help me. And then her day would rewind and she would Groundhog Day her way through and try to prevent that person from dying. But that is not the show that I wanted to put my focus on. My episode or my show that I'm going to talk about is Dollhouse, which also stars Eliza Dushku, coming from Joss Whedon this time around. The story centers around Dushku as a character, Echo, who is a quote-unquote doll. Maybe this is why I call most women dolls. Because usually when I'm talking to like anybody, I refer to them as doll. Not in like a, you know, 50s sexist way, but I don't know.
I mean, maybe I feel like calling them a doll in this way is worse.
Yeah, it's just an empty vessel.
Right? Waiting to be filled with wisdom from some dude behind a computer. No, I'd rather you call them doll like from the 1950s.
Well, so
no.
What we eventually find out is that this dollhouse, this corporation, has enlisted people who have a debt that they want to pay off or that they need to pay off or something in their past that they're trying to atone for or get rid of, or they need money for a sick family member. Whatever the case is, this affords them the opportunity to get that after the expiration of their contract. They sign away, let's say, 5 years of their life. And what happens is their mind, their entire personality and memories and mind are backed up onto a hard drive, and they are essentially wiped clean, and in their doll state are almost like childlike in nature. They're, like you said, empty vessels, kind of just a tabula rasa, if you will, a clean slate, ready to be imprinted with whatever characteristics are needed for the engagement that they're going out on. So a lot of what it centers around, especially in the first five or so episodes, it is that very episodic kind of episode of the week or adventure of the week type of thing, where these high dollar clients buy a doll for whatever adventure that they want to go on, whether it's motorcycle racing around Japan or to hunt them for sport, because those things happen. But then it eventually kind of takes on the turn of Echo kind of is this weird anomaly in the process, and she starts to retain bits and pieces of her imprints, even though they're supposed to be wiped clean every single time. Her brain is amassing more and more of this information and eventually becoming an amalgamation. And it leads to hijinks. Hijinks ensue. So they, as with True Calling and with some of Joss Whedon's other properties, including Firefly, the network, Fox, was not keen on doing long-form storytelling. They wanted episode of the week type of things. And that's why I say the first five episodes, because that's where Fox's meddling took place, was in the first five episodes of Dollhouse. After that, they were able to kind of work it into being a more overarching plot and a more long-form storytelling, which did wonders for the show. It definitely gave it a whole different vibe and feel to everything. And the biggest thing that came out of that was, or with Echo being this anomaly, was the mention of Alpha, because all of these dolls are done are named via military alphabet, so that's where their doll code names come from. And Alpha was the only other one to have this type of amalgamation kind of event. And went on to kill a lot of people and escape. When they got around for season two, the show was going to be canceled. However, the coda to season one was this weird, I think it was a 5-year jump into this dystopian future that did not star, I don't, did not star most of the cast. The regular cast was this whole different look and this whole different thing. And it was such, so it, the CODA was so well received by Fox. And because it was done on a shoestring budget, something Joss has done before, like when Angel was going to be canceled after season 4. And he managed to convince the network at the time to let him do the show on a quarter of the budget if they would let him do another season. It was the same thing with Dollhouse. He did this CODA episode because the pilot was scrapped. They needed one more episode to fill out the order. So he did the CODA on this shoestring budget, which then Fox turned around and said, okay, you get one more season to finish telling this story. Which ended with the second half of the CODA leading to an overall culmination of the show. It definitely had its moments of just ridiculousness, but I loved it for that. It was, I don't know, it just had so much like ridiculous, fun, like kind of nonsense story. And that's right at my wheelhouse. And honestly, when it comes down to it, you put Eliza Dushku in something, and I'm more than likely going to watch it. Because I do love me some Eliza Dushku. I sat in 2.5 hours of traffic to get my picture taken with Eliza Dushku. This was before we realized the back way to go to the convention center for MegaCon, and never sat in that traffic ever again.
No.
But it was, I don't know, it was a very interesting show. It was an interesting premise. I liked it a lot. The cast was definitely the highlight of it. Even though it was an Eliza Dushku vehicle, it very much lent itself to being an ensemble cast. I'm going to mispronounce some of these names, I'm sure. But you had Daikin Lockman as Sierra. She's been in a couple of things more recently.
Oh, wasn't she in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as Sky's mom?
Yes, yes. Thank you.
Yep.
Exactly right. As oh Jesus, what was her name? Jayin
something Lin. Jayin.
Yeah. You have Enver. I can never pronounce his last name. Gojka, who was Sousa in Agent Carter and in
S.H.I.E.L.D. You're right. Oh my gosh. I didn't. Literally everything we've talked about
has led right back around.
Oh my god, you're right.
Yeah. I think
Alan Tudyk.
Alan Tudyk was Alpha.
Played Alpha, right?
Yep.
Oh my god.
But Amy Acker from.
Fred,
yes.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Oh yeah,
Fred / Illyria.
Yep.
You have I'm trying to think. Summer Glau was in the show
God,
as well.
Yeah.
Alexis
Wait,
Denisaw.
Didn't she come on to? Didn't Summer Glau pop up on the show in season 2, and that's when the curse started?
What curse?
Where like every show she was on,
oh yeah,
would only that season would be its last season.
She started the curse with Firefly, I think.
Yeah,
and then she did the Sarah Connor Chronicles, right?
Yeah, and then Dollhouse.
Yeah.
Well, see, and the only thing with that is Dollhouse, I don't feel like should be included in that because they knew it was the last season, and Joss is if not loyal to the actors that he's worked with. So coming off of Firefly, you know, having Alan Tudyk from Firefly, having Alexis Denisoff and Amy Acker from Angel and Buffy, you know, a lot of these characters or these actors kind of have been absorbed into all of these different series, especially when Joss is involved. But it definitely took on so many different like paths on how it went, and as it continued on, you got these complex backstories for your supporting cast, and it really became an ensemble vehicle, especially as it grew into more long-form storytelling. And I don't know, I it's funny that this topic came up because I think maybe a day or two before, I was looking at my bookshelf of my my DVDs and my Blu-rays, and I saw Dollhouse on my shelf, and I was like, I really should watch this again, because I miss it, and I haven't seen it in a while. And honestly, I love the theme song. It's one of the things that we haven't really talked about with a lot of our shows, and especially because in the last maybe 5 or 10 years, theme songs have gotten away from what they were in television shows. Even if it's just an instrumental theme song, we don't really see it as much. I actually was going through Hulu the other night, and White Collar came up. Speaking of, I think I mentioned White Collar earlier for one of the actors we were talking about. And seeing the opening credit scene, I was like, wow, you really don't see that much anymore. Like, there's a lot of shows don't focus on having opening credits. It's very much just, here's the title card, and here's a snippet of what our theme song actually is. But the theme song for Dollhouse, it's an indie band.
And it's so funny now, because I'll actually go, if you go on Spotify, you can find openings for, like, all sorts of stuff. Like, I found the opening to Gravity Falls on there, and I'm like, I am going to favorite this.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Listen to it. Like, you can actually, I think I found the opening, to The Good Place. Just the little instrumental, like, oboe set. I'm like, it's and it wasn't even a minute, but I'm like, I need this. Like, it's just very weird how we used to have actual theme songs, we used to have actual songs as opening themes. I will never know the name of this song. I always call it the Kraft theme song because it was in the trailer. But the opening to Angel was an actual song that I will never remember what that song is called. I just know it's the opening for Angel, and like, it was used in The Kraft.
Yeah, well, the opening to Angel, the instrumental, they did a soundtrack release for it, which included the two versions of the opening. One was just like the regular TV theme, and then they did an extended version of it, like with more instrumentation. It also features Christian Kane singing, I think, an original song of his that was in the show called L.A. Song, which I fucking love. And then has, oh my goodness, his name is escaping me right now. The guy who played Lorne, who passed away, it had him singing two songs from the show. Like,
Holler.
Andy Hallett?
Hallett, yes.
Yeah. Singing It's Not Easy Being Green, and I forget which the other song was. But, Jonatha Brooke is the name of the artist, and What You Don't Know is the name of the song, which is the theme from Dollhouse. I bought it on iTunes because I fucking love the song. And a lot of times, shows that are out now that don't really do an opening title sequence will have that full version out there. Like, is it Bear McCreary? Is the composer who did Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., like all of their theme music and everything. And they all have, you know, full versions of these theme songs out there. Because, it's long gone are the days of, you know, just sitting in front of your TV with everybody and just singing along to the theme song to a show. You know, long gone are the, and if you threw a party, invited everyone you knew. Yeah, those days are gone.
You know, it's funny, they're not gone though, because like HBO shows have themed music, and other cable properties, I'm trying to think of another good example, but certainly HBO, like, you know, His Dark Materials has an amazing opening. Mandalorian. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
So I think it did go away for a while, and there are still types of shows that just askew it because they want to have that pulled open. You know?
They only played the opening once, and it drove me crazy because honestly, when I tell you this shit slaps so hard, I risked a wreck on I-4 trying to play this shit on my phone. So around every October, it's the opening to Scream Queens. They had a full fleshed out song, and it was so fucking good. And then they played it for the first episode, and then they never played the full opening ever again. And I was like, what the fuck? This is the best opening I've ever heard in my life. Why is this not being played?
Netflix and I think other streaming services, when they have that good opening, and they'll skip it. You know, they'll let you skip it or whatever.
They'll let you skip it now.
Yeah. I a lot of times, if I like it, I'm saying, no, I want to hear this again. I love it. You know? So,
Well, and I'll so make that a caveat then. The instrumental themes for a lot of the streaming shows are still there. Because as soon as I was talking about it, Mando came up in my head because I hit, you know, skip intro. And it kind of takes a pause. And then really, if you skip it at the right point, you basically just stay on that Mandalorian screen. It doesn't go anywhere. And it just sounds like it's, you know, it hiccuped for a second and then it carries on. But I'll then say this. For the most part, long gone are the days of the catchy little ditties about Jack and Diane that opened up most television shows. You don't have those catchy theme songs lyrically where you're going to sit there. I didn't watch Scream Queens, BJ, which others could probably say that would be a good choice for a topic like this as far as wanting it to come back where it ended too soon. But for the most part, a lot of shows don't have that catchy jingle of a lyric song to be put in there. You do get some of those that have the instrumental openings and some of those older instrumentals. BJ is absolutely right. Angel theme song, when those violins hit, oof, it hits in such a way that it's like, okay, like it brings in that mood right there. So there is still good theme music. I miss the days of a good theme song that I could sing along to, especially back in the day when we were watching, you know, network television live, where you couldn't just hit the little button that said, you know, skip intro. Did anybody else watch Dollhouse in the room?
Oh, you know I did. Oh, and
I watched the first season. I don't think I made it all the way through.
It's probably one of Whedon's most succinct and I would say successful in certain respects. The thing I never really loved about it is it's just the classic when you have Monster of the Week versus mythology. I always wanted more of the mythology. I like the flash forwards that they did. I think they did one each season. Because like that, I think the concept's interesting, but seeing that this seemingly like it's fun. People can just have fun and use these whatevers to see the logical implications into the future and how it could be twisted into an apocalyptic technology.
Yeah.
Like that was cool. Like that really worked for me. And that was the carrot for me, at least, to get into it. And so I think if he had more time to really get into that world, like organically through storytelling, you know, long-term storytelling, I would have been more happy with the whole piece. But overall, I think it's still probably, like I said, one of Whedon's like most distilled TV projects.
My thing, so what's funny is, again, I feel like it's ahead of its time because it touched on that whole idea of, for whatever reason, the dolls signed up to be a part of the program. A good chunk of it, some of it has to do with redemption. They either want to pay their dues, they either want to forget what happened, but like you have a handful of the dolls that like they feel like they did something terrible and they want to pay for it or they want to help somebody. So you have that whole idea of redemption through payment or through service, which again, it's a television idea that I feel like has been around. But like shows like The Good Place and even the animated series coming up, Aspen Hotel, the idea of making a positive change, but in a weird, like, sci-fi manner, is something that we're seeing more of now, because it was an idea that was only touched on back in, like, you know, the early 2000s and 90s. It's just interesting from a story standpoint. So it's another one of those things that I feel like if either a different showrunner took over, or if maybe it was rebooted in a certain way, or you could soft reboot something like this super easily. Just the way the narrative works. I feel like it would have lasted longer. I mean, if it had debuted on a different network. It definitely would have lasted longer, especially if it had debuted on, like, Sci-Fi Channel or streaming service now. It's super interesting. So I liked it, and I definitely feel like out of all the stuff that we've talked about today, it had a ending. But I definitely would have liked to. This is a concept I would like to have seen with as little manipulation from a network as possible. I would have loved to have seen this, like, completely raw and in its own element, like on HBO or something.
Yeah, and I mean, the only good thing that came out of studio meddling was them having to scrap the pilot episode completely, which I believe is on the extras for the DVD and Blu-ray release of season one. They actually have the original pilot episode, which has a lot of what you see in the first two episodes in it still, but because Fox did not want to engage in the lore versus having, you know, episode-driven story, or episodic-driven story, I guess I should say, because that happened and they ended up scrapping one of the 13 episodes for the show, it led them to do the coda, which allowed them to have time to be able to, although rushed, and yeah, like you were saying, Brian, it would have been great to see it flesh out more organically. It was nice to see kind of all of this stuff wrap up in such a way that it felt like it led to the natural conclusion of the second half of this coda, where you could see it happen in the season versus, oh, okay, well, this is just kind of weird. Like, it's just this major jump without it feeling like it earned its way there. It would have been nice to see a couple more, even if it had gotten two more seasons, because it's only, I think, a 5-year jump from the end of what we get to see as the quote-unquote main series versus the two codas. So if we had gotten maybe two more seasons to flesh out a little bit more of this, utilizing long-range wiping or remote wiping, as they think they call it in the series, which leads to this dystopian, apocalyptic, post-apocalyptic vision of the future with this technology being utilized in the wrong hands. Eric, you said you watched the first season only?
Yeah.
What did you think of season one?
I enjoyed it. I got a little bit of Alias feel from it, just in the fact that the main character learns out that the organization they're working for is kind of nefarious, and then kind of has to work against them covertly.
I didn't know Jessica Jones had that kind of storyline. Wrong alias?
Wrong alias.
Damn it.
Dollhouse was missing Victor Garber, though. If they had Victor Garber, I think they would have gone as long as Alias did. And yeah.
And why is that? Because he's sinfully delicious.
I still miss him from Legends.
Oh, yeah.
Gone before his time. Talking about gone before their time. He left that show too damn early.
I do love the fact
that... The show's still filming.
You know, the show is, but he's not on the show. And that's the problem. That's the tragedy.
I do love the fact that he played in the musical episode of The Flash. He played the weird the different dimension that Kara and Barry get flung into, him and the actor that plays Detective West, they play Iris's two gay dads in that yes. weird universe. And I completely forgot that that actor was in Rent, the film. And I think he was in Rent on stage. I completely forgot that Detective yeah. West was yeah. in Rent. I completely forgot.
You've obviously never talked to Pat.
Jesse L. Martin, come on.
We've mentioned it before on the show, but I always... Honestly, every time I either listen to a song from Rent, or I see that actor, I'm like, oh my god, that's right. He was in Rent, and he played Iris's gay dad in a weird episode of The Flash.
Joe West. Every time like there was a shootout, like right when this, like in season one, and I swear I was waiting for the day that he would turn around and just go, "You go that way, and I'll cover you." That's what I was waiting for.
Oh, not "you go that way, and I'll open up a restaurant in Santa Fe."
Oh, God. Wow, we really are gay nerds. Good Lord. Yep. Oh, and for those of you... that are listening that aren't on our Discord, we did post the openings to Scream Queens and Dollhouse in our music channel on Discord.
Ooh, look at y'all. Look at you go so quickly with that. Good, because now I want to listen to What You Don't Know. After we get off this recording, I'm totally putting it on, and blasting it.
I'm going to see if I can Shazam some of these songs and find them on Spotify. Girl, is that still a
thing? Is that still a thing?
It is, and it has saved my sanity, so therefore it has saved all of you, because when I tell you there are... I may have to do an episode on this, but there are video game songs that I didn't know were actual tracks for a soundtrack, and I have... When I tell you I have been finding the most obscure, weirdest shit this week... And Shazam has saved my life on it. I'm not even going to lie.
See, I don't use Shazam anymore, but Google, if you open up the Google app or like the Google search bar, where you would normally do like the hit the microphone to do talk to text, if you hit that and you put it near music, a little music note pops up and it'll do the same thing as Shazam.
Oh, so, even better.
You don't even have to do that if for some reason, and maybe this is just on Pixel phones, you just have it sitting there and you hear a song or a song comes on and it recognizes it. You'll see it on the bottom as a scroll. And this is a great feature until you're playing music trivia and you realize looking down that you can cheat.
You're cheating.
Well, this has been a really hard debate. Like I have to turn my phone upside down then and like ignore it. Which is how you should be playing trivia. Yeah, I know.
That is negative 20 points.
Listen, I'm just saying it's happened. I didn't say I used it.
Straight to the bad place.
I was like, BJ can tell you, BJ knows how many times at fucking Waterford Lakes, at what's that place?
Gators.
We yelled across the table to be like, "Put your phone away,
Adam."
Yeah. Definitely he's Adam.
He's the one I'm going to be like, "I talk shit about you in our podcast, so I suggest you listen. You listen to every episode to see where I talk shit about you." That's how I get listeners.
I love it.
So if you are listening to this and you are interested in my interview series, which we have now called the Rainbow Spotlight, and I have totally owned that, rebranded that. We're going to try to push that. Terry Bloss of queer cartooning fame is going to be my guest.
Oh my God, I love Terry Bloss.
You're more than welcome to join us. It's Mondays at 9 o'clock Eastern.
Ooh.
And that'll be the last one for the year. And then I have already lined up at least three or four for January. And I'm very excited. I'm working on one that I will reveal once I confirm, but It's going to be a weekly. It's been kind of weekly-ish lately, but yeah, weekly series. And then we're putting these audio, Pat's taking these and we're putting these out as audio entries for the podcast, you know, eventually. So, yeah, but you can catch them live on our. Yeah, and they're great ones with Cena Grace and Andy Mangles. But there's a ton more coming. But you can also go watch them now on our YouTube channel. So if you have not seen our YouTube channel, they are all there live at the time and then up afterwards to watch. And Facebook as well.
I love it. I love it. I may have to join you for the Terry Bloss one because he is an absolute sweetheart. Fantastic artist. Purchased some stuff from him at DragCon when I met him probably about 4 years ago now. He was a guest on Casa Coco, on one of the first couple of Casa Cocos that Coco Peru did, and is just an all-around great guy and a Flame On listener. And that was probably one of the first times where I talked to a creator and was kind of taken aback and was like, oh my god, people do listen.
And what? You know me?
Well, exactly. That's kind of how it was. I was like, hey, you know, we're doing a Game Geeky podcast called Flame On. And he's like, oh, Flame On? I listen to that while I'm drawing. And I was like, wait, what?
Eric, do you have these moments?
No.
What? I don't have these moments. In fact, the only moment I get is, oh, that's right, you are in a podcast. I never hear about it. But somehow you still aren't listening. You have these nice creator exchanges, and Brian's like all these nice interviews, and I'm like, listen here, you motherfuckers, I'm gonna talk about you, I'm gonna talk shit about you, and you have to listen.
I've already told Adam that you did, so you're set up now.
Good.
Leave a review. I love it. But definitely check out our YouTube channel for past episodes of the Rainbow Spotlight. Yep, stole that right out from Willem in Alaska and Ray Chaser and Hot Goss.
That's where it came from? Oh my god, yeah. I completely forgot. Oh my god.
Exactly, oh, well. Yeah.
Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, so there you go.
Exactly. As as every Drag Race podcast, review podcast says, they're the only Drag Race review podcast out there. So the Rainbow Spotlight will just be, you know, we're the only ones doing this. Sure. Mm-hmm. The quote-unquote only ones. But yeah, check those out. And I do want to segue from that into, I fell down on my job when we did our last roundup because we are going to be pausing payments, or, you know, utilizing Patreon as for the most part in 2021, or at least the beginning of 2021, as we just kind of reorganize and figure stuff out. 2020 has been a hell of a year for a lot of reasons, not the least of which being the pandemic we're still in. But trying to get everybody organized, being in multiple places, has been a bit tougher this year because of that. You'd figure because most of us are kind of homebound at a lot of times, it would be easier, but it's not. We still got to try to make a living and keep money coming in our pockets personally. But we did have a new patron join on just before we did our roundup, and I missed out on giving him his proper shout out. So I'm going to shout him out here, and then we'll do the proper shout out in on the roundup for the next time that we all gather in a couple of weeks. But I do want to say a big howdy to Sean T. Red. Sean Red, what's up? Thank you for joining on our Patreon. I am sorry that we are so far behind. We are working on getting all of our stuff put together and getting our shit together and getting all of our Patreon stuff up and running. And we're still going to be putting out content for that. And we will be caught up on that very soon. So hopefully within the next maybe 2 or 3 weeks, we'll at least be a lot closer. I'm not going to guarantee that we're going to get, you know, a whole bunch of get all of our micros up in the next 2 weeks, but we're going to start getting those pulled together and get our Patreon content back up to where it should be. And yeah, my sincerest apologies to all of our patrons out there. If you would like to join on before the end of the year and access our Patreon exclusive content, head over to patreon.com/flameonshow and join on. But a huge thank you to Sean for joining on as a patron middle of November last month. So thank you for that. Brian's got his Rainbow Spotlight. Eric, have you been gaming on Twitch?
Not as of yet.
Not as of yet? All right, that's still coming. What's your Twitch handle so we can get you some Twitch followers as you get ready to venture into the world of online gaming?
It's generic, GENERIK underscore games. Generic games.
Oh, I thought you had that other games. One. So you have two Twitch handles, you naughty Twitcher.
I do, but I can't. This new one is better for branding, I feel.
Oh, yeah, obvi.
I like it. I like it.
For Twitch, if we're talking Twitch promo, let me just say, Eric, I'm gonna subtly nudge him to do some more Twitching because I think we can take over Twitch very quickly. I've been doing Japanese lessons for anyone who wants to learn Japanese with me. I've been playing these games, and I need to send you these. You'll enjoy these. They're RPG, kanji, kirigana, katakana learning games, and they're on Steam, and they're really cheap. And so I've been playing those online and doing my Japanese vocab with WaniKani. So if you like Japanese, interested in the language, Curling Bear is my Twitch handle. And I'm also doing the Rainbow Spotlight up on that channel because we don't have a Flame On Twitch dedicated yet.
We all have our individual ones, and I feel like it'd be tough to go back and like rebuild another Twitch channel.
Yeah. It's possible, but I'm on the road to affiliate, so I'm trying to get to 50. So if anyone out there is a Twitch user and wants to throw me some love, it unlocks new features if you're not aware of how Twitch works, and it's kind of obnoxious. But Curling Bear is my Twitch handle, and I do content like a couple times a week.
I was going to say I even have a Twitch account, but I've literally never logged into it once. So,
well, you need to log into it at least once and follow all the rest of us to help us gain our followers.
I literally just logged into it so I could do that.
Yeah, and then also Pat from Bears in the City hosts his weekly trivia game. Sorry, not trivia, game night. I wish there was more trivia. I mean, there's some trivia with Murder Trivia Party, right? But that's on what, Wednesdays, usually 6 o'clock.
Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, so that's 5 o'clock Pacific.
Oh, yeah, gosh.
And that's twitch.tv/bearsinthecity. So you got twitch.tv/bearsinthecity, twitch.tv/GENERIK_GAMES, generic games, _games, twitch.tv/curlingbear, if you would like to follow us along. I wish there was a way to like do an umbrella channel that like had all of us on it so we could do Flame On and then like have all of our separate ones underneath there, it and make it.
There actually is, I think, and I don't know if you, Eric, you may know more. There's like a teams. You can actually like have like a team of Twitchers. So we could do Team Flame On and bring us all under that same umbrella.
Oh, that works.
I like that. So we'll
have to,
I like that.
We'll have to figure that out then. Okay.
There you go. And then that way we can do all of our individual things and still do Flame On stuff under there and all that. But that, I think, will wrap up our microsode as we've been chatting. This was a lovely chat.
A two-hour microsode?
Listen, when we get going on a good topic, that's, you know, thank you to BJ for coming up with this topic.
No, this is a full-blown series now. I'm declaring this a series, and because this was, like I said, this was cathartic. I feel like we've had so many aha moments in this, just this one episode, that we need to do this again so that way we can get all of our television blue balls off our chest.
I already have three more lined up.
Yeah, I've got a bunch already. So yeah,
I was like,
I declare this a series.
I've got my homework to do then. All right, well, we thank you all for hanging out with us on this, as we chat about this topic. shows that ended too early. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another roundup of pop culture topics. And yeah, check us out online, flameonshow.com. That has all of our social media there. Check out the Rainbow Spotlight on Mondays with Brian on the Flame on YouTube account and twitch.tv/curlingbear. Yeah, we'll see y'all in dos weeks for a little more Flame On, closing out 2020 in the year that was.
Bye-bye.
Bye, bitches.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.